It's Monday, June 19th, 2006, and you're listening to Episode 6 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is about 54 and a half minutes. All right, everyone got your pencils?
Yep.
Yep.
All right, got your dice?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right, character sheets?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Okay, got your Cheetos and Mountain Dew?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
All right, round one, Aarakocra.
Yes.
You're listening to Fear the Boot, and I'm Dan, and today I've got with me Chad.
Hi.
Adam.
Hey.
And John.
Hello.
And just to explain that little intro there, we used to know a guy, and Chad sat in on one of his games once, and his games, that was how they began, was... When you sat down at the table, or you go ahead and tell us, you were there for
remember that we do, I don't know if you'd call it a different game, but we do games where you focus on story and plot, and there's combat and stuff in it, and action. And I had this friend, and he ran a game that has been going on for years and years and years. One campaign, same characters. And it's a D&D second edition game. And he asked me to sit in on it one time with him. I'm like, yeah, sure, I'm always open to new things. Sure, why not?
And I thought you were like, wow, you're just going to put me right into the plot. You're an amazing GM.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, wow, that's great. And that was how the game started. It was, he was sitting there, everybody was writing. He's like, okay, got your dice, you know, got your pencils. Right. You know, and he did that whole thing. And he didn't start it out with Aarakocra, but it was the game opened with round one.
And it ended with round
48.
Whatever, several and hours later.
That's every night. That's what they do.
And by the way, for
anyone, not every night, but every gaming session.
For anyone who didn't get that joke, Aarakocra is the very first monster in the D&D second edition, like massive monstrous manual.
Out of that story evolved a joke that we had kind of running through our groups of how the monstrous manual isn't really a table of monsters that you can draw from.
No, it's
actually
a module.
It's a scenario.
It's a campaign setting and a module all in one.
Work through them alphabetically.
There's a great hallway. At the front of which is Aarakocra.
Whoa, whoa. Great hallway? No, no.
All the way
too
to the
much
end.
Gets in the way combat.
Pull it back, Dan.
Pull it back. Initiative. Round one.
There's an empty void.
Yes.
And closest to you is Aarakocra. Farthest from you is Zombie.
And every single page in between.
I was trying to come up with a plot that would tie that all together, but
no, there isn't.
That would destroy it.
No.
For those of you that haven't been on our website lately, feartheboot.com, the forums are now up. So if you guys want to stop
amazing.
By...
Amazing.
Yes, yeah, so you guys are going to get me fired.
Yeah, you know, it's funny...
It's not so much a forum as it is an ongoing chat room.
Yeah, it's almost like a multi-channeled IM. We talked... When we put the website up... We decided that since we're a new show, we wanted to start out with a very minimal site. Mm-hmm. I mean, why put up this huge site for
listeners? Cafe press and ads and huge forums, and we have two people who likes us.
Don't
Hi,
worry,
Jim,
folks. I'm still lobbying for Fear the Boot boxer shorts, but please, Dan, continue.
There will be a picture of that up on the website. No, actually, there won't. But
Jim or... John in boxer shorts?
No, there will not be for sure John in Fear the Boot boxer shorts.
This is a free podcast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the pay site has John in the Fear the Boot boxer shorts.
Fear the Croissant
but
has that.
After getting several requests for forums, we went ahead and put them up, and now they're actually getting a pretty good amount of activity. So if you guys get a chance, stop by and take a look at those. Also...
Well, on another forum, I have to say, I was absolutely floored by the response to them. We had like sort of an internal... I guess you call it a debate going on through emails and stuff. It's like, should we put up forums? Shouldn't we put up forums? Should there be like just a couple of threads? We're only going to have two users on them. Who cares? Are we going to bother with this? And then in the end, it's just like, okay, we'll just put them up. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, just put them up and get it over with. And then it was like, bam!
Huge amounts of posts on them. I was amazed at the response.
And if forums aren't your thing, also someone, it was Chuck from Dragon's Landing, so I want to send a thanks to Chuck, sent me an email letting me know that the audio link on our links page, I had apparently the right link text, but where the anchor actually pointed was back to Liberated Syndication site. So I don't know how that happened. I too much copying and pasting on my part, because that is fixed now. So if you want to send us a voicemail, you can do so on audio. Plus, we still have the good old email links and all that. And if you have sent us an email and have not gotten a response, I also want to remind you guys that we do respond to all our emails. Mm-hmm. So if you did not get a response, probably your spam filter killed our response. Just write us back and say, hey, I never heard back from you guys, and I'll resend you the response from a different email address so you'll get through the spam filters.
Yeah, speaking of which, Jim, I still haven't received that email. Maybe it just got blocked by another spam filter, because I'm sure you sent it to me, jerk.
Adam, you're obsessed.
I feel left out, man.
Speaking of people feeling left out, we've gotten a fair number of emails and posts asking us where the name Fear the Boot comes from. And it's a fascinating and eventful story.
I heard the story on the way, and it was boring as hell. So instead of regaling you with the details of reality, as sad and trite as they are, we're going to let you make it up.
It's
trite. Heady it may be. The winner of this will become the originator of the Fear the Boot name in a sort of, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus kind of way. Also, a forum title is up for grabs.
That's right. You guys were talking about levels and experience here.
Level 2, Ben.
This is your quest.
That's right. We are not going to tell you where Fear the Boot came from. At least not yet. Maybe some future podcast down the road. So maybe. You write us in your story, post it on our forums. We'll create a thread for it. You tell us where Fear the Boot came from. Make up your own story. We've only got a couple requirements. We're going to read it on the broadcast after we pick a winner. So please keep it relatively clean.
No
cussing. Yeah, no strings of profanity, bizarre sexual situations. Also,
well, what else is Fear the Boot?
Just so we can also get this in on the podcast. Please keep it relatively short. Keep it down to about a paragraph. Don't send us like a...
War and peace.
About what? 500 words, I guess?
I don't know.
That would be a lot.
Yeah, that
is it a lot? I don't know. I don't
500
know.
Words is like 2 pages in MS Word.
Is it really?
That's more like 1,000 words.
A paragraph.
Words,
use your discretion. Yeah, we
paragraph.
Trust you.
Just a paragraph.
Keep it relatively short.
Dangerous.
But you send us your where you think Fear the Boot came from. We are going to pick a winner. We will read the winner's entry on the next podcast, maybe 2 from now if people need more time to enter. And whoever wins is also going to get a new title in the forum, which didn't seem like an attractive prize to me, but
people are wanting
the viciousness with which they're fighting.
There's some threads where people are public demands.
They're going to worked up about that. So let's go ahead and hang that pork chop out in the middle of the dogs and see where it goes.
Pork chop.
We got an email from a listener named Scott that we want to kick around.
Hi, Scott.
Yes, hello, Scott. And Scott writes in and says, we're an experienced gaming group in St. Louis looking to add a gamer to our group. What suggestions can you offer on how best to find this person? Right now, we're running a Shadowrun campaign, a Vampire the Masquerade campaign, and an Exalted campaign. We're thinking of posting on some web forums and in gaming stores around town. We're also thinking about requesting a sample character with a background for whatever game they might be interested in. What are your thoughts on this issue? Any suggestions to avoid getting burned? Would appreciate any ideas you may have. Thanks. And Scott's in a position that I think every gaming group gets in at some point where...
We've been in it plenty of times.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
It's a terrible situation.
Yep.
People go off to college. People get jobs. People drop out. There's drama,
people get
fights.
Burned out,
just get sick of it. Mm-hmm. For whatever happens, suddenly you find yourself that your gaming group that used to be a robust number of people with hardly enough room around the table for them all is now like... You and one other guy. And, you know, maybe that's not Scott's situation. Maybe they just need, you know, another
one
person
other
to round
person,
things
a couple
out.
Other, yeah. My first piece of advice is look at the people closest to you and then start working your way out.
Yeah.
You know, you want to look at friends, family, brothers and sisters. And when you start looking, even before you ask the person, you know, you have to ask yourself, is this guy or girl or whatever going to commit? You know, there's nothing worse than having a game where you have 6 people and 4 people are really into the game, and then the other 2 people are just there to hang out.
I think commitment's part of it, but that's definitely an important thing, but I would actually start a step back. That when you bring...
Are they gamers?
Well,
I wouldn't even start at are they gamers. I would start at am I compatible with them in a
exactly.
social setting as a human being?
That's exactly where I was going, is you've got to begin with, this is a person that fundamentally... has to be something of a friend to you. This has got to be someone you can sit around at a table with and get along with, first
somebody
and foremost.
Who you trust to come over to your house.
Because
he's not going to stab the GM.
Thanks, Ed, for that story. We might want that in full later on the forum.
But we we've done this before. We've gone out and trolled for gamers at gaming stores, and we actually got some really good people this way. But the biggest problem you run into, and I think you've got a good thing, you've got some good ideas of where to find these people, Scott. Secondly, I think you've also got a good thing there with the sample character and background, because what that will at least tell you is what this person's gaming style is. Mm-hmm. If they send you a guy who's just a meat hook with combat stats versus a guy who's
got a story
right, you know, it's going to tell you exactly what kind of person you're looking at. But I would recommend, before you even commit to anything with this person, meet on neutral ground. Say, hey, look, before we even game, let's go out to this or that restaurant. Let's have a hamburger. Let's kick back a few beers.
But have an interview with the person.
Well, I wouldn't even say interview. I mean, just talk to them.
Yeah.
And see, look, when you sit down at a table with a hamburger and a beer or whatever your taste is, can you get along with this person? Mm-hmm. You know, are they easy to talk to? Are they just this sniveling idiot? You know, what kind of person is this? And then from there, say, okay, you know, hey, you seem like a pretty cool person. Would you like, you know, hang out with our group and get involved in some more games or whatnot?
And I would remind everyone that gamers are made, not born. So if you have friends and friends of friends and you just like somebody, whether they game or not, show them the hobby. Maybe tool around with a little 30-minute mini game. They could love it. They could hate it.
Yeah.
People usually land in either extreme.
Yeah, and I agree with what John said there and what Chad said earlier. Start with the people closest to you. Because if you've got someone who's got good personality and an interest in the game, John's absolutely right. You can transform them over time into a pretty good gamer.
And whatever you do, do not wrangle in the completely disinterested girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know, the girl who does not want to be there and is there because of some sort of obligation to you.
To be fair, there are boys who are at the game that don't want to be there, but the girlfriend is the archetype.
Yeah, that's a stereotype right there.
That's not many, but yeah, that does happen. Or something we've also seen is you get someone who wants to hang out with you but really isn't that interested in the game, and they just become disruptive because they really were never interested to begin with, so they get hyper and loud.
Or you get the people who have no interest in taking part in the game, and they just want to hang out and listen to the story. And you got to kind of make sure that the person you get is going to take part. And you might want to ask them that, too. If you can't find anybody within your circle of friends and family, go to your local gaming store, comic book shop or whatever, and put up a note saying, you know, looking for blah, blah, blah. And what you don't want to do, though, is you don't want to put up a note said, group looking for player D&D 2nd edition, call this number. When we had to do that once, we put up a note in a gaming store looking for a player, and we detailed it. We said, we do not run this kind of game. We do not run that kind of game. We do run this and this and this. And we were very specific about what, not just the brand of product we were playing, but what kind of gaming group we were.
I think if you put up a notice like that, though, the interview becomes crucial. Because then it is an interview then. There are so many gaming dorks out there looking for a game that will destroy your group. You need to weed that out quick.
Well, and something else, that's a very good point. Something else you also got to do is know yourself. When we have done this in the past, as I said, we got some really good gamers out of this, but we also got some turkeys.
Yes.
And part of the problem I have as a human being is I'm too nice of a guy. And
no, you're not.
No, I mean, seriously, when these people came in, we got some people that were really disruptive to the game, that were really hard to work with, that just weren't our kind of gamer.
Right.
But they liked hanging out with us, and I was in a position where now I had to find some really polite way to say to this person, hey,
you're out of the group.
Yeah, well, or at any rate, you're out of the game. And that was really, really hard for me and created a lot of difficulty. Speaking of people you find from games in hobby shops, the one time we tried this, one of the successful guys we got out of that was someone named Tom. And around that time, we were running a D&D campaign, and Tom played a gnome. And what, you know, this kind of made me think of is Tom played an extremely good gnome. And I say that because most people that play the stereotypical hard ends of the character archetypes.
All they play is like the extenuated sort of outrageous features of the character, and that is their character.
If you play a troll or an orc, you're just dumb and drooling and have your pronouns all mixed up. And if you're a halfling or a gnome or a kender, whatever, you're just spry and whimsical and happy and run in circles and hyperactive and steal everybody's possessions. And this guy played just an extremely good gnome. And I'm trying to think even really how to describe the way he did it. I don't know that I can. And that's kind of the beauty of it. Yeah. It's not a, he didn't follow three bullet points and that made a good gnome.
Mm-hmm.
He took believable character and just kind of put it through the fishbowl of a gnomish society.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he wasn't have ridiculous inventions and catapults that shoot him around and crashing flying machines. I mean, no, it wasn't anything that stereotypical. It was just...
It was a character with a background and a history and then a future, too.
Goals
and desires and a personality.
I like how you're talking about this guy like you were there. Like,
I wasn't there. I wasn't there at all.
Well, but when you were there, but, you know, you're right, though. It was very deep and believable. It's just distinctly gnomish. And something you were there for was we played an online Shadowrun game, and there was a guy in there, and I cannot think of what the guy's even his character name was, but he played a troll. Do you remember this? Because this was a long time ago.
Yeah, vaguely.
And he, you know, the guy, he played the trolls kind of silly and goofy and a little bit oafish, but he didn't just play him as the big, tough idiot. You know, he actually gave him some depth and some heart and some, you know, a little bit of torment in his background and some depth in his desires. But why is it so hard for people in general to get past those stereotypes and play those kinds of characters good?
Well, and like another example is generally the people I've found, men who play women, they don't just play a person who is a woman and has womanly attributes. They play a seductive vamp or an outrageous bitch or just something totally ridiculous. And for the most part, and I'm sure that there are people out there who have played good women, but you know what? I've never seen it.
Same here. So.
And what I've experienced sometimes in the break from the stereotype is the jumping out of the acknowledged stereotype pool and into a sort of secondary stereotype pool where you're a dark elf ranger who dual wields scimitars just like Drizzt. But nobody's like Drizzt, but everybody's like Drizzt.
But everybody, yeah.
You know, I guess also you can see the completely reverse extreme of this, where you get people that are trying so hard to be different that they make a character who's almost archetypically different.
Yeah.
That I'm going to play the troll who is a weak little bookworm and extremely refined. And
I think that's the problem right there, is that when people are making these characters, they think they're either going to make, I'm going to make the archetype and with the stereotype stuff, or I am going to sit here, I am not going to do that. Well, guess what? Doing that or not doing that, that's not making a character.
Yeah.
That is like choosing to go down a path. When a person comes to it and says, I like gnomes, I'm going to play a gnome or whatever, and here's his family, here's his this, here's his that, here's his past, his present, and his future, and you just make a character and play a character loose.
You know, and here's a great exercise for that.
Push-ups.
Yes. I mean, as stupid as it sounds, and this is really pretty stupid, but years ago, we used to do these little role-playing exercises just to try and get us, I mean, kind of like how actors do warm-ups. We used to do little role-playing exercises to make us think about these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting here 10 years later, that's probably a overamplification of such a minor subject. But nonetheless, let me draw from one of those. Sit down around your group of gamers, look around the table. And the fact is that all these people are people who are interesting, who are fascinating, who are fun to hang out with.
The characters or the players?
The players. I'm not going to the players. Oh, look at the players. Like, I can sit here in this room with our hosts right now, and I can say that everyone in here is somebody I like, somebody who's interesting.
Except Adam. He just showed up.
Right. Somebody.
They let me in because I was banging on the window holding the croissant.
Yeah, Adam's
50 feet.
Adam's the guy who rolled up an archetype. But everybody else here, you know, is an interesting person. But the fact is, there is nobody here is anything weird.
Yeah.
Nobody here is like a dragon hiding in human form looking to voice poor printers upon the world.
Oh, no.
You know, and think about this with your characters, too, that your character, he does not have to be made interesting by his template.
Yeah.
Nor does his personality have to be driven by his template. For example, if you were to sum up my personality, you could not do it by race and occupation. You know, I am not, my personality is
not
that of
human male.
Right, human male.
Programmer,
show host. Yeah, my personality goes way beyond that. And just as when you're making a character, if you're going to roll up a guy who's the troll garbage man, that does not mean he has to be the immediate stereotype that the phrase troll garbage man conjures up in your mind.
This is why I hate in role-playing game books the concept of an archetype. I just despise it because I understand the necessity of it sometimes and the reasons why game designers put them in, but it just, I think it pigeonholes players. You know, players open the book up, and if they're not, you know, really experienced players and such, they open those books up and they're like, ah, I can only play a, you
fighter,
know,
mage,
fighter, mage,
rogue.
Yeah. And there's nothing that I can break out of that.
Even if they don't say that, it sits in your subconscious. Yeah. So it's like, well, what are you going to be? And immediately you think back to those archetypes.
Right.
Now, I personally am glad they include them for a different reason. They make great NPCs. But they can be constraining, whether psychologically or by design, mm-hmm. to the players that they're supposed to be helping. So, I don't know. Archetypes are kind of a mixed bag to me.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I understand why they put them in there because, you know, especially with like D&D, you know, you assume that a new player, okay, I understand this concept, but what do I, of a role-playing game, but what do I do? What can I do?
Well, you know what's strange is D&D is typically thought of as the entry game.
Yeah.
But
it's the most restraining.
You know, actually, now that I think about it, I don't think the D&D 2nd or 3rd edition, at least not the handbooks I have, I guess, I mean, they have a few sample characters, but they really didn't have archetypes. They didn't have, like, the dwarven fighter.
Yeah.
They didn't
you mean like a pre-generated...
Right, like
they have starting packages in 3rd edition that are exactly the dwarf fighter, the half-orc barbarian,
yeah,
the elven
that's
mage.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And they're good for what they are.
Well, and I seem to remember, John, you made a comment on a podcast in the past where you said, you know, you can't expect the gaming company to make your character for you.
Right.
You know, and I understand that, too.
But if you don't know this from that, as far as this whole 400-page book is concerned, and you just want an optimized package, or you're a DM, and you don't want to have to make all those characters for yourself. So they're a shortcut, but unless you really want to save 20 minutes or get 5 new people into the hobby, I wouldn't use them.
Yeah, they're kind of a mixed bag. I mean, and of course, to bring up the great Shadowrun debate, not to pick on the thing, they have archetypes in there, which are completely pre-made characters, at least in the 2nd edition book we're flipping through.
Right.
And then they have contacts. These are just sort of little NPCs with little blurbs on them and a little bit of pre-generated stats and stuff. I found their list of contacts to be more interesting characters than their list of archetypes. So.
Right, but yeah, even still, though, I'd hesitate to. I mean, the contact/archetypes make good inspiration, but they can be psychologically limiting. I think in future shows, I'm just going to start banning Shadowrun. No mentions
of
it.
Not a bad idea.
No, please.
I hope the gaming industry has the same idea. Well,
oh, good lord.
That's John.
John at FearTheBoot.com.
John at FearTheBoot.
You know, Adam, you need to say something incendiary just to get people to start writing you. So,
you know what? I don't have any incendiary opinions,
though. That's your problem. That's what you're like.
Well, I don't understand
how
a role-playing game can be bad.
Well,
I think you were just flipping through the book and you didn't like the pictures.
What do you hate about your own GMing style? Go on that. You rag on yourself.
Well,
extrapolate.
You know what? It's poorly thought out. You know, about 15 minutes into the game, I'm like, man, where is he going with this?
Okay.
I'm like, God,
well, that's
this
what
guy
you hate
sucks.
In gaming.
He's not engaging any of the characters. He doesn't really have any destination in mind. He really needs to listen to Fear the Boot.
What you do is you blame your
games.
Own problems on a rule system, and then you go off on it. And it's fate fail.
Listen, I know where the fault lies, and the fault lies with that jerk running the game who sucks.
That's actually, I think John's exactly right. That I don't think this is universally true, because people do have tastes and such, but I do see, like, people take their own limitations, sometimes not just of rules understanding, but of imagination, and put them on the role-playing games.
Yeah.
We have a friend who absolutely cannot stand any level of anachronism or technology in fantasy.
Mm.
And now we've got Chad on the flip side,
yeah,
who cannot stand any level of magic in a sci-fi.
Right. And again, with Shadowrun, rules are rules. Any game can be good. I don't like the mixing of fantasy and sci-fi.
You know, really,
why?
Keeping on topic, but kind of going at it from a different angle. You know what I don't understand is
that's just another way of saying tangent.
No, this it's a tangent that breaks beautifully right off from this.
Okay,
and actually, this goes back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. Before
hit me with it.
All right,
you are
the generic game is D&D.
Yes.
So why is it that, not counting the advice portion of the show where we do the mock campaign, why is it in the first half of the show, we probably talk more about Shadowrun than we do any other game on the face of the earth, which is a game that is not the generic game. It's not even a game we're playing right now.
It's not even like a simple basic game. It really, beginning gamers shouldn't really be gaming it.
Right, and I wouldn't call it...
not the advanced ones. Yeah. Please continue, Dan.
I wouldn't call up any stretch to the imagination an obscure game.
No.
But once again, it's not your generic everybody knows it game like D&D is. And that's
maybe we're just FASA fanboys. I don't know.
I wouldn't deny it.
Who picked it?
Well, Dan,
yeah,
well,
I picked it for the sample campaign.
For the sample campaign, but not
he thought everyone liked it.
But no, I picked it for the sample campaign. I never picked it for every discussion topic and every example we ever give. At any,
that's true.
I don't think I've ever given an example of Shadowrun as the topic.
I know I haven't.
I'm staying out of this. Right.
So, if we were to adapt the Shadowrun setting to the monostat rules.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. I would hate it. I would
dangerous.
Love the math, but I didn't come to the RPG for a math game. I would see the dragons flying over LA, and I would have vomited
majors.
My mouth, and then I would reject monostat despite having created it.
For the advice section of the show today,
thank God.
Yeah, we're gonna roll right into that to save you guys from wherever this is headed. Whether you would end in disgust or rage, we'll just go ahead and stop that.
Let's just go ahead and post either on the forum.
It's a good way to elicit listener response, though.
What's that?
Say things that
anger them.
Yes, enrage them.
Thank you, silent majority.
We just need to create an entirely new forum category. Shadowrun. Go.
No, I want to stop talking. I want episode 7, not counting our mock campaign, to be Shadowrun free.
Shadowrun
you free. Got it, baby.
That's
not
our goal.
A problem.
That's our goal for episode 7. It's no Shadowrun. Good, bad,
that's
ugly.
Our goal for life.
5 years of gaming group was no Shadowrun. That's not a problem.
I think the three of you
see,
are
even when I'm talking about
problem.
Even when I'm talking about dropping Shadowrun, he can't shut up about Shadowrun.
This is true.
Man.
A river runs deep.
So for the advice portion of the show today, we are going to talk about individual plot construction.
Mm-hmm.
And let me start by defining what I mean by the plot construction. If you've been following along with us to this point, we've come up with the characters. We've created a campaign outline of kind of generally from game one to the final game, this is what's going to happen. We've put together NPCs, and now we are ready to sit down and write. These are the notes you're going to bring with you, or the ideas you're going to bring with you, to the first actual sitting with players there. This is what you're going to read from to entertain them for the next 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 hours, however long your gaming group goes. And if you want to look at a sample plot we're going to post on the website, you can look in the resources section of feartheboot.com. And I promise I will be better this week than I was last week. By the time you're hearing the show, there really will be a plot outline up. I won't leave them like the NPC templates that are this.
Are you going to put those NPC templates up?
Those are going to be up as well. If you're listening to this, the NPCs are up and the plot outline is going to be up as well. So those actually will be there in the resources section. I apologize. I got derailed on those last week, partially because of setting up the forum and a lot of email correspondence and other stuff. But I didn't really make it a high priority because I just kind of figured, I'm doing these as an academic exercise, but nobody's
who looks at them. And then we're getting emailed like,
where are they?
Where are they at? I need them.
So it's like, okay, because I need to get back to doing those.
Yep.
So we will have that up there.
Well, it just goes to show. It's like, if you say it, do it. So.
Yeah, that's true. Because you never know. And that's what we're finding out left and right with this show is you never know.
Yeah.
Because we thought nobody want forums and we were wrong.
We didn't think anybody would listen to us either.
Yeah.
And we're wrong about that.
I thought nobody would read the thoughts for making the episode posts. And the minute I forgot to do one, here comes the emails. You never know what people like. Don't say it. So
I know what people don't like. It's Chad.
Cannot dispute that.
Right. So one thing we are not going to cover in the course of today's subject, just because it would take too much to answer, and we are going to come back to this at some point in the very near future, one of the next couple shows, but we're not going to talk about it today, is what happens when your players wander from your plot.
Right.
That you wrote plot notes that they're supposed to go in here and talk to this guy, but your players at some point in the plot...
They want to go kill your plot is to kill the dragon? They go to the other side of the world to set up a kingdom.
Yeah, exactly.
It has nothing to do with the dragon.
Or they're supposed to go in and talk to Person X, and instead, by this point in the game, they have pissed off Person X to the point that they don't want to be...
And then killed
him. Yeah, and killed him or whatever. We're not going to talk about that today. It's a great topic. It's an important topic. It's just too big for this broadcast. We'd be off on tangents so long we never get anywhere. So what we are going to talk about, though, with this is let's begin with where you're going to get it from. Now, we've talked a lot about inspiration for characters and campaigns in previous podcasts, so I'm not going to hit that topic again. But one thing that is worth noting is be sure to draw it from your campaign. If you've got this campaign outline, take a look at your campaign outline. Try and, you know, give yourself a little bit of an estimate of what's going to transpire in the first sitting. If you've been game mastering for a while, you can probably just feel out by intuition how much note you need to bring to make to last the length of your game. If you're a newer game master and you're not sure, write too much. It's been my experience, players almost invariably spend far longer on plot points than you thought they would.
Yeah.
So bring a little bit too much, and you're probably going to be okay.
I don't know. There's almost a caution with bringing too much, too, is because I've been in games where the game master has just gotten lost in his notes.
Yeah, and that's fair, too. Shade of Gray, as always, I mean, if this show had a motto other than the one on the website, it would probably be all things in a shade of gray.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, good preparation. Don't drown yourself in your notes. Now, one thing that we were kicking around here is Chad and I, who are the two people here sitting at the mics, the game master the most often, we have very different styles of noting out and running our plots. In my style, I believe in bringing an outline of the plot. Not, once again, no binders and binders full of information. But
you used to do that when we were little
and
kids,
it was a
but that was
huge mistake.
Yes.
Don't do it. But I bring maybe one or two, maybe three typed pages of just some bullet points of what's going to happen, who they're going to meet, some major speeches.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about how I construct those notes here in a few minutes. But, Chad, you have a very different style of doing this.
Generally speaking, I don't bring notes at all. I have in my mind sort of general ideas of encounters that I want the players to interact with. I want the group to meet this kind of person. I want this kind of conversation to take place. I want this kind of encounter to take place. And I want to seed that through the plot. I also, in my mind, none of this is on paper, I have how I want the game to start out, and I have an idea of how I want it to end. And that's all I go into the game with. And now, I might have like a couple of notes on a couple of characters, maybe. But I really, when I sit down, I just start running the game, and it's very freeform for me. That doesn't necessarily mean directionless, although that's one of the disadvantages of doing this, is that if you are just not on task and on key, and you don't have a good flow going down, it loses direction very fast.
I wouldn't call your games directionless at all, Chad, but the directions can morph at a moment's notice. For example, in a game we were playing very recently, we were landing planet side in a battle tech, and he just had us roll a percentile dice for how many of us made it. I mean, if we roll a 5 there,
sorry,
it's a guerrilla campaign. If we roll a 95, it's a conventional war. The whole tenor of every session from that point depended on that throw the dice, and it was awesome, and he played it.
Yeah, and Adam rolled the dice, and he has horrible luck. So generally speaking, I knew how it was going to turn out.
You jerk face.
Before we get too deep into the details of how that plays out, let's talk about exactly what we mean, what that process is.
Mm-hmm.
So you come in noteless. How does this start? Let's say, okay, you're running a campaign or a specific setting, and you said you have a couple ideas of things you want to happen. Can you throw out two or three examples just for conversation's sake?
Well, like, just for conversation, and this was not from any specific campaign, this is something I'm just thinking up the top of my head. I want the players to meet an evil king.
Okay.
And the king is very, you know, subtly evil. He isn't like, you know, he isn't a cultist and he isn't murdering townsfolk
and stuff.
Got
a crazy red eye.
Yeah, oppressive taxes and horrible conscription and impressment and stuff. And I want the players to confront him, but in my mind, I also want the king to talk to the players and give them a logical argument on why he's doing this. And perchance, if I can play it right, I want to try and turn the players' minds around. I want to mess up the characters, not necessarily the players, but I want to mess with the characters' worldview.
Okay. Now, what we're describing,
and I want to seed that somewhere in the plot.
Just off top of my head estimate, the plot point you just described would probably last about half an hour, maybe an hour.
Yeah.
But we'll
depending
stop
on
there.
The character,
we'll stop there because I don't want to drown the listeners.
Yeah, we don't want to act that out.
Right.
That's for
no.
sure.
So, okay, so let's...
No, let's just game it right now. Where's the dice?
Round one.
Round one.
Alakakra.
Oh, we're on Aboleth now.
Aboleth. Burst out Alakakra. Of the king's chest.
What is page? Well, I'm looking up what page two would be.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you're right. Very good, John. Aboleth.
I know that
wow.
mission. Anakrang I know that campaign setting.
Man.
I have traveled through the realms of zombie.
Is it Anakrang? Oh, well. Who
anyway,
cares? Yeah.
All right. But let's say that, for example, we were running a really short game. This is only going to be a half hour, an hour game.
Yeah.
And you come, and this is what you brought with you, that you want to have this interaction with the king.
Yeah.
So now we sit down. Do you just improv from there? Is
yes.
that how you execute just improv?
Yes, I do. Well, and here, it's a specific kind of improv. You know, we go through the whole process of the characters getting up in the morning, and then they do some of the routines,
right,
and they interact with blah, blah,
filler
blah, blah,
RP,
blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And that leads up to them going into the throne room to where this event in my mind I want to happen. I have a notebook and I have a pen. The page is blank. And I'm sitting there and we start role playing and I start coming up with concepts about the king that make him unique. You know, he has a gruff voice and then he's old and then this is what his name is. That's the hardest part about improvising, by the way, is coming up with a name. Off the top of your head. And then I note these little things down because this campaign goes from week to week. I want there to be consistency. When they revisit the king, I don't want him to go from an old guy with a gruff voice to a young man with a
right.
clear voice. And
so you almost make your game notes after the fact.
Yeah.
And
I
use
let
that
the,
for consistency.
I let the players... You know, I don't run a sandbox random game where they're just
right.
in a world and things are happening. Although it's my goal to present that to the players, to make the players think that's what's going on, even though I have in my mind the linear line I want them to take.
Let's ask for a minute. Let's say let's create a line, a very
sure.
short one, that after the meeting with this king, they're supposed to go outside and there's going to be a honor duel between them and the prince or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, the king's champion it took exception with how one of the characters reacted
right.
to them, and there's a duel.
Well,
and
I spit on the king.
So
then you spit on the king.
Without plot notes, once again, how do you get the players from point A to point B? Just is it improv again? Do you just
it's improv, and it's feeling out my characters. Well, you have to know your characters, and you have to know your players. And you have to know what motivates your players.
One thing I would say,
and I fail at this too sometimes.
Right. And one
you
thing
know,
yeah, we spent
work.
Hours in a bookstore talking about nothing.
For the folks back home, one of the things you really got to walk away from this: don't try Chad style
ever,
unless number one, you're a really good improver. You can come up with your plot and your stuff just out of nowhere. And secondly, you know your group pretty well.
Yeah.
Because you can also quickly, the one of the real dangers of an improv game or a noteless game
mm-hmm.
is your plot can go so far off kilter because you don't necessarily have a really, really clear, predefined vision of exactly how these things are going to go down. You can find yourself not just a little off course, but
yeah.
so far in the gutter with it that it's almost unsalvageable.
Yeah,
the game's
like
ruined.
The game, now, and like I said, there's advantages and disadvantages of this.
Right.
The advantage of it is that the plot really flows, and the characters can really have a lot of freedom to do what they want. The plot has a lot of freedom to go where it wants. And you can really get out some good ideas and stuff. And you're not, you know, chained to notes. You're not restrained. On the other hand, we've also had games where I just don't have to do any good. The plot, the wheels kind of spin. I'm not connecting with the characters. The characters don't know where to go. I don't really know how to get them there. And those are usually bad days. Usually I kind of cut those games off quick, and it's just like, okay, guys, we're just not feeling it today. Let's either go out to eat or just hang out, do whatever.
Right. Before I kind of wrap up on Chad's version of how to do a
plot.
Well,
Dan, let me ask you this. On your style is completely opposite of mine. We hit on it a little bit.
Right.
Let me ask you, when you sit down, how do you come up with the different plots? And what do you physically do? Because you make out notes.
Yeah, that's a good question. Let me give one quick aside here before we get into that. With the improv style, you were talking about sometimes you have trouble coming up with names.
Yes,
and that,
terrible.
That got me thinking on kind of a little bit of a tangent, and I'll try to keep this quick.
But there's no quick tangent.
No, this is a universal problem with Game Masters. The fact is you're in a setting that has thousands, millions, billions, trillions of other peoples and entities out there, and you just can't come up with names fast enough. We have two solutions.
Perquacky Dice.
Yeah, one is Perquacky Dice. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, there was an old word game, I don't know if it's even still made anymore, called Perquacky, where you would roll these letter dice that were weighted, there's like a whole handful, six-sided dice, and the number of times a letter occurred corresponded to the frequency they occur in the English language. Like, E was the most common letter.
X only had one on one die.
Right,
you
and
know,
so
you
QU had like one or two. So you could shoot a handful of these dice, and they almost invariably formed a phonetic.
Yeah.
And you could name somebody based
on
that
phonetic. Great for fantasy games.
Yeah. So, in this case, the the fantasy dice would just be vowels and apostrophes.
Yep.
But if you don't have Perquacky dice handy, two other things we found that work is secondly, write a sheet of names.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something a lot of game masters do. They come to their games with a
sheet. Why didn't I think of that?
A sheet of names. It's just like, what is this guy's name? You just stab the paper. Okay.
Yeah.
He's, you know, Barth Laxalt, which is a
Oh my God. Why
terrible
didn't
name.
I ever think of that?
The third thing, and this is kind of limited by skill level, but being a programmer, I actually wrote a little program that creates phonetics. So you can just hit spin on that thing and it gives you a phonetic bunch of junk.
We should put that up on the website.
Yeah, I'll see if I can I don't know what I did with the program. I'll see if I can reconstitute, put it up as a web page. So it's just a name generator. And sometimes it comes out with complete crap. I mean, it's just no human being could pronounce it.
Best fantasy names ever.
Yeah.
I play with those on my MMOs, and I got rape one time. I didn't roll up rape and put him in the fantasy game.
You should have.
Wow.
So rape.
Yeah.
Rape? This was on a random name generator?
Yes, it was.
It is the paladin rape.
Yes.
Champion
Purveyor
of virtue.
Good. Protector of women. Wow. I would have rolled with that, man.
No, this was Dragon Realms. They would throw me in the can real quick.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Yeah, you roll these dice, you can get. You know, actually, on that topic, this really happened once. We were playing a game of Star Trek, and Kevin was trying to come up with a character name. He rolls a Perquacky dice. Kid you not, he rolled Spock.
No way.
I was there. Lies. I saw this happen. He rolled Spock. So,
wow.
Well, did he use it?
No. No.
Nimoy is crying.
Well,
so
Nimoy doesn't have tears.
Right,
so
pull it back
off the tangent.
Let me ask you this: you make notes. When we were little kids, it was copious amounts of notes. But
right.
We did crappy games anyway, crappy players. But anyway, nowadays you make notes.
Right.
So you're thinking of a plot. Like, how do you come up with that?
Okay. Let's give an example here. We'll actually go with your game, and I'll redo this in my version.
Okay.
And I want to define what this isn't first. And what this is not is this is not a script. And this is what we're talking about, the copious amounts of notes. If you walk in with a script of X happens, then Y happens, then Z happens, and it's in this huge drilled down detail to where you know where everyone's standing, what everyone's saying, it's a bad way to do the game because you get stuck in the conundrum of either you hold your players to it and the game is boring and wooden, or you don't hold them to it and 3 points down the page, you're lost. Your game's over. Now, what I would do is if, for example, I was taking Chad's game and I was writing it in my version, I would take a paper, a piece of notebook paper, do it in Word and use bullet points, and I might say, when the plot begins, the characters are in an inn in such a town that's ruled by this king, and they wake up, and I might have a bullet point that says, just allow them to do waking up RP. If I know from my previous set of notes we talked about in the other games, the NPCs, I've probably got a barkeep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I can just improv some RP where they come downstairs and the barkeep says some funny things, or he's bickering with his wife, or just some kind of background comedy to add color. Then my next bullet point might say, a messenger comes from the king calling the players to see the king. I'm not going to detail what this guy is going to say. I'm not going to detail how it's going to go down, because if they're sitting there in the tavern just eating a little bit of bread and some milk to start the day, then he might approach him one way, as opposed to if they're out in the middle of town roughing up some thief that they chose that I never even planned on them doing. You know,
it's shaking down some old lady.
Always a good time.
So I'm just gonna have a bullet point. Just says a man shows up and asks them to come to the king. And the next bullet point from that, I'll say they arrive at the king, and we know that the prince is going to be, or his champion is going to be a problem. So I might say, as they come in, have the champion challenge them on something. And I'm not even going to write what, but if they're walking in and one of them's mouthing off, or one of them's brandishing a sword, or whatever, then he might make some kind of jab at them just to set up that degree of angst. Now with the king, I say, they're called in the king's chamber, and I might put a note that the king is going to try to change their worldview. And now what I might do is come up with a few choice sentences. I think these are the major bullet points the king's going to cover. Mm-hmm. Order is better than chaos. The taxes are necessary for the army because of the evil orcs on our northern border, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I might detail out these bullet points of things the king's going to cover. No script. No, no great soliloquy from the king, but just these are things I want him to cover. Now, what these plot points, these bullet points allow me to do is to keep a direction to the game and to keep myself from running out of inspiration, but it's also flexible enough that I can rearrange these to fit the players. So if the players walk in and the first thing they say to the king is, without even the king opening his mouth, they just shoot down point one,
right?
I can move the points around out of order. Or if after point one they bring up point four, I can skip down to point four and rearrange these to improv the game. And this is what we're actually going to post on the site as a sample of my method, because I can't...
Because there's nothing to post on mine.
Yeah, I can't put improv in a PDF and put it on the website, so you're just going to have to make that one up yourself.
Okay, now let me ask this of Adam and John. Mm-hmm. There are advantages and disadvantages to both styles. What are the advantages and disadvantages as players, not as GMs or outside observers, but as players sitting there having this kind of game run for them? What are the advantages and disadvantages for players for both styles of GMing?
You want to go?
I would love to, Adam.
Go ahead.
I think these styles of GMing fit right into you two guys' respective personalities as well, but views on the... rule of structure and
rules?
Hard experience point. Yeah, the role of rules, basically.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to have something that's a borderline acting improv session, like some of Chad's are, Chad sometimes for his dice just says, give me 2d6, give me 1d20, make it a high number. I mean, we barely need rule books until we get to the battle maps to move little pewter figs around. And that's fun for what it is. For Dan's sort of game, and I haven't played under Dan, I'd love to, but we'll... Shortly. If you're going to have a game where the levels count and each modifier is going to impact the flow of the game, and you really want a sword plus two more than you want a sword plus one, then I like to know that they are very carefully placed behind this door and that door and not just handed out willy-nilly, because they matter, whereas in Chad's they really don't.
Yeah.
Adam, how about you?
Well, I probably feel more about the story that the structure matters. Like, there have been times with Chad's games where we have a lot of creative license to impact his world any way we want because it's very freeform, and he generally knows where he wants us to end up, but getting there is more our thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sometimes there have been too much of us not impacting it in the right way, and then he has to strain a lot to get us to that end. So I don't know. The structure was probably a great thing, but I haven't played under Dan.
Yeah, this is definitely a huge taste thing.
Yeah.
I'm
not saying that I'm right and Dan's wrong or vice versa. There are a lot of advantages to both styles. There's a lot of disadvantages to both styles.
Know yourself, know your gaming group. Do they want structure? Do they want freeform acting? Can you improv, or is that just, you just aren't that creative?
Are you going to introduce structure to my group and then make it to where they want nothing but structure, and then I'm up a creek?
Listen, I don't know. I love structure.
I came wanting structure, baby. You sold me to your system. Maybe Dan will sell me back.
We'll find out. That's I'm going to run a
next
game
next week
for them.
On Fear the Boot.
Yeah. Arm wrestling.
Round
Who's
one.
Better?
Structure.
Structure. Arrow Cockra.
That's structured.
It is.
Boy,
one
is
point.
It.
One page.
Boy,
perfect.
Is it.
All right. To wrap this topic up, let's drop a bomb here, because I think we all have a fairly unified, albeit not positive, opinion. Pre-written modules.
Well,
before everybody starts trashing pre-written modules, I don't have a problem with pre-written modules.
Well, let's talk you've never played a pre-written module.
Not that you know of.
Oh, yes, he has.
Oh.
I've played role-playing games outside of your group, by the way.
You
whore. I want a divorce.
I put pre-made modules on you, Chad, and heard positive reviews.
All right, let's talk about
it. Well, and I just want to say this gets back into the thing of, is there such a thing as a bad game?
Right, and the answer is
good players, good GM.
Right. It's basically the rules.
But modules in and of themselves.
All right, well, let's then, okay, apparently this is not going to be the thrashing I thought it was going to be.
I don't like modules.
All right, well, let's break down pre-written modules. In our opinion, what's good, what's bad? I think what pre-written modules is they serve two very important purposes. One is they are a great source of inspiration. If I'm having writer's block, flipping through the modules, sometimes even just looking at the pictures, the little bits of plot points kind of gets me thinking, wow, that's kind of a neat idea. I can cannibalize that to my game. Second thing, and this, I can't remember when we were kicking this around earlier before the show, was Chad or John said that, I think it was John, said that these are a great entry point for a beginning game master.
Right, right, yeah.
So John, do you want to expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, I think they're a better aid to game balance, not necessarily to creativity. You can take a module and toy with it and put it in your game universe, but you want the right artifact to be behind the right monster, especially for a newer GM. A player can smell when something's out of place, and it can ruin the rest of your game, especially, again, if you're going rules intensively. If you're playing a Warcraft game, for example, and you have an Arctic setting module you found on a website, set it in Northrend. You know, if you're playing Forgotten Realms and it's in a city, set it in whatever the big one is.
Enter Forgotten Realms city down here.
Forgotten Realms city number 7,832. Whatever.
Elminster Town.
Plug and chug, I guess, is my my motto.
I think it can also help with game flow and game expectations for new GMs. Because if we go back to that tape you were talking about in a previous episode, with, you know, we've encountered a well, what can we do?
Do anything.
You know, if you've got a new group where you're not sure how to construct a game, you're not sure what's supposed to transpire, what can transpire in a game, this may be a good thing to get you kind of thinking down that direction. I guess with older, more experienced groups, you know, I think there's a danger that a module simply... it is not flexible enough or deep enough because it can't be tailored to the people or to the characters that are in your game. That, you know, when you pick up a module for Dungeons and Dragons or BattleTech or whatever, you know, they don't know your group. They don't know your, they can't write this to every person on the face of the earth and get any depth.
They
out
know
of it.
Lida and Tordek.
My problem with the modules is that they're like video games. You know, it's like it presents you with a level, and you run through the map, and you knock down the enemies inserted here. And I'm sure that there's modules out there that have more story and depth to them and such, but my experience is that the great bulk of the modules, especially like the D&D ones, are merely maps, monsters, and how to get through the monsters on the maps.
And maybe that's a problem, is that's the expectation the gaming company set.
Yes,
I know when I read through most books, and we talked about this in a prior podcast, you get maybe a page or two on this is how to roleplay, and here's a few roleplaying tips. And then the rest of the book is this massive tome of combat and equipment.
Stats and numbers and combat. And it's all killing. It's all
right. It's all about killing stuff.
Yeah.
Killing stuff or picking the locks and breaking the codes that are between you and killing stuff.
Yeah.
And we used to bend bars and lift gates. But not anymore.
Bend bars and lift gates is a
so you can get into the castle so you can kill stuff.
Start killing. Yeah.
But, you know, you see that in the modules. The modules that I've looked through, at least.
Yeah.
You get the dungeon maps and this, that, and the other, and there nowhere in the plot does it say, at this point, they should stop and RP with so-and-so. And here's what so-and-so's personality is like, and here's what their goals are. And if they make friends with them, this is what you should do. And if they make an enemy with them, this is how it impacts the plot. It just instead
here's his combat stats, and here's his lines.
Yeah, here's so-and-so.
He's got a big sword.
Yeah.
He this is what dangerous. He says as he charges at the player characters on site.
Or maybe it's a little better than that here's so-and-so, and he runs the tavern, and here's like two sentences of personality. But there's nothing there that draws him into the plot.
Right.
He's just, he's an incidental figure you bump into on your way to butcher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
And I guess, you know, if that kind of game works for your group, then go for it. But we personally, doesn't work for us.
No.
So,
you know, I think those kind of modules are more made for power gamers. You know, it's just like the dice throwing action.
Right.
Which just is not for me.
Yeah. Diablo on a tabletop.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for plots. Once again, be sure to check out feartheboot.com where you can contact us, send us an audio. Mm-hmm. We've also have our resources. We'll put up a sample plot for our Shadowrun game. This time it really will be there. And I apologize.
Lies.
I apologize for the delay last time. And we hope to catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.